case that I'm very happy to talk about, where we've extended it beyond the lifespan of any other canine that I'm aware of that's ever had hemangiosarcoma. You don't want to damage a system, you know, any sort of biological system. You don't want to ding it so badly that it's not going to be able to come back from it. And we see that all the time. As a group, as you know, researchers and scientists and people and clinicians, I would hope that we do better. What we have very definitively shown and what we're seeing is after they start following the protocol and taking the serum, metastatic behavior, there's a total cessation of it. It just stops. And
the scientists at LivePet are hard at work solving our cancer epidemic. They have the most promising cancer trials going on now with pet clinics around the country that I have ever seen. You can see the promising cancer research and trials going on some of the past shows that I've done. The links are below. While working with C60 and other ingredients, these talented scientists developed a hair growth serum that really works. They sat on it for years. After all, cancer is their focus. But they now realize how much the profits from this product could really help their cancer research. So the C360 Hair Growth product was launched. C360 Hair Growth is specifically designed to revive your hair growth by targeting hair follicles and restarting your hair growth cycle. C60, the active ingredient in C360 Hair Growth, reactivates hair follicles that have stalled due to hereditary hair loss, physical conditions, or environmental factors that may affect follicle production. You will begin to see visible results using C360 Hair Growth within 3 to 6 weeks. Buy today knowing that your future hair growth will help fund very promising cancer research. See more at the link below. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Ian Mitchell back. He is one of the top geniuses that I have come onto the show, and he's just amazing. The stuff he comes up with, he's an entrepreneur and he's an inventor, and he is the one that's doing C60-based cancer research. And he did the trial. You should go back and listen to that first video I did with him on the C60, where they were doing a trial for cancer with pets, and he's working with veterinarians. So he's going to talk about how that trial went. And then we get into different aspects of C60 and what it can do for you, and then how his cancer research, his whole thing, his cancer therapy is to stop the duplication of cells. And they have figured that out. And because they figured it out, it leads to all sorts of other things that they can do, like different viral diseases and things, because the therapies that people have been working with that are so promising cause tumors. And so they had to stop. And so now that he's figured out how to stop the growth of tumors, it allows so many other applications. And so we talk about system thinking and how science has really been stunted and held back because they look at everything from such a microscopic point instead of taking a whole broad system level approach at how to solve problems. And so we talk about, he is so amazing. He stays after for my Patreons, and he talks more about what some of his cancer protocol has allowed him to do and, you know, take forward to the next steps. He's amazing. He also talks about this hair regrowth that he came up with. He gets challenged. People challenge him on different things, and then he gets obsessed and comes up with a solution. But he has this way to regrow hair, and he's using it to fund all the other research. It's amazing in and of itself. Now let's get into my interview with Ian Mitchell. Ian, thank you so much for rejoining the show.
Hey, Sarah. Glad to be back.
Well, I've done some pretty hard shows lately, so I needed to get back into the edge of science, and what you are doing definitely qualifies, my gosh. But the last time we had you on, we were talking about the ability, the best thing I've seen that breaks down cancer tumors. And mm-hmm. we were setting up this trial with vets and dogs, and I want to know how that's going. What can you just fill us in on the whole details and what happened after we did that interview?
We actually had an influx of people contacting us who were setting things up and wanting to get in the trials. And some of them were good candidates. Some of them were sadly not good candidates. There's definitely a certain point where it unfortunately looks like, you know, things have progressed too far and they've already been on different drugs, and that kind of muddies the waters in terms of how much you can actually, you know, get in terms of eliciting the right response, because if you're preferentially going to be binding to some other sort of chemotherapy with the, you know, serums that we had developed, then it negates the benefit of both. So in a lot of cases, we had to tell them, no, just, you know, continue with your canine oncologist and continue doing the therapies that you're doing. And but we did find a small group, and we've been working with a couple of the vets doing that, and then a couple of individuals as well. And so it's ongoing. Luckily, all of those animals are still alive. It started actually before we did that, but it was kind of a standout. There's a canine cancer called hemangiosarcoma, and it's really, really nasty. And there's one dog that we spoke to the woman actually right after the first time we met and did an interview in last November. We spoke with a woman in Virginia, and she had a dog, Coco, who had hemangiosarcoma. And typically after it's diagnosed, 3 to 6 months later, that's pretty much it. That's the expected lifespan. And it just doesn't go past that. And so I am happy to report that, much to everyone's surprise, it has been, I think her diagnosis was in May of 2017. So we are now in the middle of October 2018, and Coco is still bounding about. So that's
great. What is the diagnosis with that so far?
Well, I don't know that they've actually gone back and done additional scans to see what the progression is, but it doesn't appear, because hemangiosarcoma is very aggressive. So by all accounts, her vet did actually say, you know, how is this dog still alive? Which was kind of interesting. And Coco definitely is along in years, and so not as spry as he once was, but is doing pretty well. I mean, it's really heartwarming to me that we've done something, at least in that case, that I'm very happy to talk about, where we've extended it beyond the lifespan of any other canine that I'm aware of that's ever had hemangiosarcoma. So, if I'm off base, you know, I'm sure someone will correct me, but to the best of my knowledge, that's never happened before.
So with the trial you're doing, what are the vets saying? Are the vets just really keyed in, and are you having some good experiences?
We are. And it's the thing that's been the most problematic, because the reason we wanted to do this is to get more data and to really iron out the kinks so that we could do it on a much broader scale. And the thing that I'd say has been the most problematic has been following a really rigorous ketogenic diet. One of the vets that we've been working with in New York got with a board certified veterinary nutritionist so that they could work out the parameters of what the dogs needed to do. And actually, right now, oddly enough, he's doing it with cats and not dogs. But what they worked out was a protocol for the feeding to keep them in a state of ketosis. Because with the way that our serum works, it was actually for the targeting. It was necessary the animals be in a ketogenic state. And so that's been a little tricky, because we keep seeing things like I got a call from that particular vet, and he said there's been a progression in the tumor. And I said, you know, that seems odd. How's the cat's diet? And he said, you know, the cat got sick. Let's check. And so he checked, and sure enough, there had been a little deviation from the diet, which unfortunately, when animals have a cancer of that sort, and there is a deviation from the diet, it's basically like pouring gasoline on a fire. You know, if they have the carbohydrate load, then the cancers are nutrient primal. They pull that in and they start to grow and propagate again. So that's been interesting. I think we've started working with a couple of people who are doing specifically ketogenic foods, and we're trying to get it down so that we can actually, in lieu of just saying, talk to your vet and do this, that we can actually recommend, you know, based on your dog's breed and age and weight, take this food, take this food, take this food. And I think once we have that pegged down, it's going to be far easier for people to really do it on a broad scale. Because, you know, you do these trials and you try and figure out what's the weak point in what you've done. And at this stage, the serum isn't the weak point. Its efficacy is fine. The weak point is the protocol. And I think those things are getting sussed out over time. And I would hope that over the next 6 to 12 months, we have that completely ironed out so that we can start a much broader scale and actually release it. At this point, it's something that no one pays for. We're just providing them the serum so that we can work out the kinks and make sure that everything's on the up and up and working properly.
If your digestion is off and your metabolism is slow, it could be due to gluten. According to Harvard MD Dr. Alessio Fasano, we are able to completely digest every protein we put into our mouths with the exception of one, and that's gluten. Gluten is everywhere, almost all restaurant foods, salad dressing, soy sauce, and many, many more. Due to gluten, people are suffering from symptoms including joint pain, headaches, skin issues, digestive problems, weight gain, brain fog, and lowered immunity. Most people suffer from at least three of these. Also, people are getting gluten contamination on a daily basis. Some have more tolerance and experience less symptoms, while others are more sensitive and their health degrades faster. The good news is that there is an enzyme complex which specifically breaks down gluten, DDP4. Learn more about this amazing enzyme and be able to eat the foods you want and get back to a healthier you. Click the link below.
Well, that's really great. So what do you think, what do you, in your mind, how great do you think this would be? Like, what is the percentage of people, or not people, because we're going to dogs and cats, will overcome cancer using this procedure? If the protocol is fleshed out.
The protocol will be fleshed out. It's going to take time. And, you know, and I've said this before jokingly, but it's true. And I anticipate at some point in the next probably year or two that we'll start doing IRB trials in people if we can get all the approvals and proper protocols put in place for it. And I think we will, because it's definitely moving in that direction. I think over time, the efficacy will prove out to be exceedingly high. And the bigger component is probably that it's not toxic. You know, it doesn't leave your body decimated, which is really, that's a, you know, kind of a pet peeve of mine, is that you don't want to damage a system, you know, any sort of biological system. You don't want to ding it so badly that it's not going to be able to come back from it. And we see that all the time.
Chemotherapy kills people more often than the cancer itself.
Well,
in a lot of cases, right? I mean,
yeah,
we just had an experience with a young 15-year-old that died from the chemotherapy, and he had a 95% chance of making it because they caught it so early, but the chemo killed him.
That's my statement would probably be that isn't as isolated as an event as I think people might like to believe. I saw a study that said that 2% of oncologists would actually give chemo to their wives and their kids, which, you know, and you hear those sorts of things. So I don't know the validity of that statement. It may have been wishy-washy, but it's been my personal experience with family members and family friends and just, you know, people that I know that I care about, that the ones that have had chemo, in some cases it's worked, in some cases it hasn't. In one case that I can think of very recently, from the time she started chemo, it really exacerbated the spread of the cancer, and in 6 weeks she was dead. And that's unfortunate. It you know, as a group, as you know, researchers and scientists and people and clinicians, I would hope that we do better, and I think we will. I think everybody's actually genuinely moving for the good of people, and they're doing the best with what they can. But there are a lot of constraints. I mean, the reason we kind of tiptoe around it and are so careful about how we approach things and make sure that we don't cross a lot of boundaries and lines is that the repercussions for doing those sorts of things, even though your intention is great, and you might really genuinely be trying to help, if you cross all of the legal thresholds that put you in a zone where you can be, you know, sued, arrested, detained, whatever, you know, your research can be quashed. I mean, you had Dr. Boyd Haley on, and
it's the saddest,
by all
saddest
accounts,
stories I've ever heard.
It actually, I watched that interview and it was completely depressing, to be honest, because he was obviously a really, really sharp chemist. I mean, I listened to him and he was sharp as a tack.
Head of the chemistry department at University of Kentucky.
Yeah, everything he was doing made absolutely perfect sense biologically and chemically. I was genuinely impressed with him. And the story that he recounted, you could see that he was a genuine guy and hadn't even crossed over those boundaries, but was still getting pretty hefty degree of reprisal because he was pushing the bounds on things that would have probably a pretty negative economic impact on a lot of larger groups. And that's the situation that we have to contend with. And that's the structure of things within which we have to work. So I think to that end, we are going to very carefully watch and, you know, dot our I's and cross our T's and make sure that we're toeing the line and doing everything as legally as we can. But at the same time, trying to make sure that we help. You know, I mean, I really do think that's the goal of most everybody who's doing this kind of stuff, is to genuinely help.
Well, I think that working with animals is such a great start because you can really get a good idea of how it's working. Whereas with people, because of all the restrictions, they're not going to give you those. I mean, people don't pay attention to the animal studies like they do to the people studies.
Unfortunately, that is sadly very true. If you want to understand a lot of things, you know, you can go to, and I've done this on a couple of occasions, I will pull the veterinary studies because people don't give as much credence to it, and also cats don't sue you. So, you know, I mean, you can legitimately misdiagnose something in a cat and give them something, and the cat is not likely to strike up a lawsuit on its own. Whereas if it's a person, you know, we live in a reasonably litigious society, and I think that happens with a great degree of frequency. A lot of doctors are really concerned, you know, because of malpractice and things like that. So I think the constraints, you know, are pretty tight, and they have to operate within those boundaries. I would hope that in the future, the things that we're doing, because they're non-toxic, because they're natural, and most of the stuff is just truly anti-inflammatory in nature. I mean, that's, you know, we've talked offline, and that's a big component to me is, you know, focusing on not antioxidant behavior, because everybody looks at, you know, fullerenes, because initially fullerenes are really strong antioxidants, and there's no contestation about that. Everybody will agree that that is the case. Unless they're in light, in which case they become a pro-oxidant. But because of their anti-inflammatory or because of their antioxidant nature, they're effective. But really the trick is to focus more on the anti-inflammatory components. That's it. And we pegged that down pretty early on. That's why if you read our first patent, it really isn't about antioxidant behavior of C60. We targeted lipofullerenes because they really only elicit the right response when they're bound to a lipid. Otherwise, they're not so beneficial for you. And then more specifically, when you couple them with different peptides, you can get a pretty phenomenal response. I mean, our differing yield between just the C60 and versus the way we actually ended up with, in order to get the patent out, we had to show definitively that we had a 223% yield above and beyond those individual components. So it's more than twofold the effect that you'd get just from a straight C60. So really that's why we target
with your cancer.
Not just with the cancer, just our baseline stuff that we do for dogs and for people, you know, because we release the products for humans as well. So we changed them a little bit and kind of made them more beneficial.
Yeah. Why do you get a 200? Explain what the benefits are with your stuff versus just doing straight C60.
Okay. Well, as I said, C60 is phenomenal in terms of an antioxidant, and that's what you're getting is antioxidant behavior and a component of anti-inflammatory behavior too. But really what we did is by adding the different peptidases in, like serratiopeptidase, which was, you know, a drug in Japan for, I think, the better part of 35 years, and then it was downgraded to a supplement because there wasn't enough perfusion throughout all the tissues. It was actually being used as an arthritis drug. What we did is we coupled things in such a way that the body couldn't break it down because of heat and stomach acid. We tested it up to 80 C and in really, you know, low pH conditions, so that we could verify that, you know, we weren't going to have this stuff broken down in the GI tract, and we were going to be able to deliver it where it needed to go in a cell. And we did cytokine testing so that we could show what the inflammatory markers were. And we got a 223% yield. And it's because of the combinatory things that we're doing with peptides and proteases and things like that. Because as a base, lipofullerenes are really great. I would hope that everybody at some point starts taking them just as a baseline. But if you want to get a really pronounced effect, you need to do something the way we structured it, which is why we did that. You know, in the experiment where we had the P53 knockout mice, you know, the cancer mice, well, the P53s, we actually did that experiment, and we showed that we got a 93% extension in lifespan, but that really wasn't why we were doing it. We were working on inflammatory or anti-inflammatory things. And because we knew that most diseases and most autoimmune conditions really are something that can be mediated by dropping inflammation. Stephen Gundry, he's a doctor that was a cardiologist. He wrote a book called The Plant Paradox, which it's kind of a neat read. And he talks primarily about lectins, which are inflammatory proteins in plants, because plants can't run, but they can fight off predators by virtue of putting out different molecules, in this case lectins, which are a deterrent for being, you know, plants being eaten by other creatures. And likewise, gluten is a good example of a lectin. You know,
gluten's terrible, right? It's like the worst, one of the worst things for us.
It's pretty bad. And, you know, as a species, we simply can't digest it. It's not, you know, there's kind of a misconception about gluten, not to get on off, you know, off topic, but there's a misconception that some people don't have a response to it. And that's not actually true. It's going to affect everyone. The difference is about 14%, if I remember the statistic correctly, 14% of people are affected gastrointestinally. With the other people, it's just an inflammatory response, and it can be in your heart, it could be in your brain, it could be in your skin. A lot of people develop, you know, things that look like psoriasis after they have gluten. And it's because your body simply can't process it. Now, the question is, how healthy are you and how much of a hit can you take and for how prolonged a period? But, you know, that all gets back to lectins, because gluten is a lectin. So it's this inflammatory protein that a plant makes so it can block absorption or be a deterrent, or in the case of gluten, a structural component as well. But how that pertains to people is, if you want to nix those sorts of diseases, and Dr. Gundry referenced probably about 14 different diseases that are, you know, autoimmune conditions, inflammatory conditions. And if you can stop inflammation, you can get a huge cessation in that. And he points out in that book that, you know, it sounds like hyperbole to say you can stop, you know, these diseases, and he rattles them off just by virtue of changing your diet. But it's accurate. You know, you can drop those levels of cytokines in your system, and your body wants to be healthy. So it puts itself back online and works on the anti-inflammatory components, downregulates the inflammation, and then your immune system kicks in and fixes things. You know, you do fundamentally want to work properly.
And is that part of why, when you do the fasting, you know, the interval fasting, which I'm doing and I'm feeling a heck of a lot better, it gives your body just so much more time to clean itself up. And
you go into a state called autophagy, and your body, when you're fasting, your body takes the break and it starts to process out toxins, and your inflammation drops. A lot of people actually do, you know, that do a prolonged fast, it will actually reset their levels for glucose. And there have been a lot of people that are reversing diabetes. There was a really good book by Dr. Jason Fung called The Complete Guide to Fasting, I believe, that outlines a lot of the things that he's been doing in his clinic with people who have diabetes. And I know that that can be mediated by anti-inflammatory behavior, because we've actually seen that in quite a few people and quite a few animals that had diabetic issues that no longer have diabetic issues. And that's obviously not going to work in all cases, but in some cases it definitely works, because there's a decrease in inflammation in the pancreas. And if you still have pancreatic cells, you know, your body's going to start producing insulin the proper way. And not to say that's going to happen all the time, because again, it probably won't. But we've seen it enough times that it's not some sort of anomalous behavior. I know that you decrease the inflammation and you get the body going back online, then you have these beneficial results that, you know, by all accounts don't generally happen, but we're seeing them happen with a pretty high degree of frequency, which gives me great hope, because I think if people start doing things like you're doing, like the intermittent fasting, and their body goes into autophagy. There was a report that came out last year that I thought was brilliant. They showed that if people fast for 3 days, after the third day, your body starts producing new immune stem cells. So basically your immune system goes back online and starts to rebuild itself from the ground up.
Yeah, that's so really cool.
It is actually, it was exceedingly cool. And I immediately did a 3-day fast after I read the study.
Just to see how you'd feel. But, yeah. You know, I couldn't lose weight until I started doing this. I mean, I was like, what the hell is wrong with me? I'd go and do hardcore workouts, everything else. Now I do this fasting. I'm losing weight. I'm eating about the same. But I went down a level on my workouts, because I can't fast and work out like that. But it's working and I feel better. I can't believe it. You know, so it does work. But I want to get back to what yours does. You have arthritis medication in there. You have other things in there that work together to do what, compared to just standard C60? That's what I'm trying to get at, because that's amazing.
Yeah, it's really all about inflammation. You know, like the rat study, Fathi Moussa's rat study in 2012, it was great. It extended the lifespan, but there are so many differences between, you know, rodent physiology and human physiology. I mean, it's almost a joke. You know, they don't have a gallbladder. They don't, you know, I mean, they can process toxins. They don't have a response where they can vomit. There are a whole host of things that are just different. I mean, you know, in terms of their ability to process sugars, they could handle a huge amount of sugars, like whiskey or something like that. They can process, I think, the equivalent of 12 fifths of whiskey in a day without issue. I don't know many guys, even my size, who could could do that. It's just kind of one of those things where there really is a big guff in terms of the physiological differences between us and them. So when you look at the rat study, yeah, it did have a pronounced effect on lifespan, but is that really the core of human aging? And, you know, guys like Bill Andrews, I think, are probably pretty quick to point out that, you know, rats don't have telomeres. So it's not something that's going to elicit the same response. I mean, at this point, a lot of guys, myself included, I think, are hitting this point where we've been doing things enough that we're becoming statistical outliers in terms of our telomere length, which is great, and that's a plus. But again, if you look at the rat study, that had no bearing on that whatsoever because of the differences structurally between humans and rats. And so our contention has been very early on, it was, you know, we thought it was C60 was kind of the holy grail of things. But then we pretty quickly, through doing a bunch of drilling down and looking at the data, realized, yeah, antioxidant behavior is fantastic, but it's really anti-inflammatory behavior that's going to make the difference. And that's why we filed the patents and were issued the patents, because initially we were rebuffed by the patent office. And they said, you can't just put in four things that are anti-inflammatory and antioxidant in nature and, you know, say that it's going to work. And we actually had to demonstrate for them through university testing that, yes, we actually get this much of a synergistic effect, and it's more than two times as strong in terms of its ability to drop cytokines, which really...
More than anything else that you've seen on the market.
Way more than anything else I've seen on the market. And, you know, and the other plus is it's something that you can do on a continuous basis. I mean, some of the calls that I get, and this is one of the really fantastic things about what we do, is I'm kind of like a kid in a biochem candy store.
That's why I love it, though. Yeah, I love that. But go ahead.
So fun playing with these things. It is in truth, like I would do this, you know, just for grins, because I really do love it, and I get to help people, which is awesome. You know, people and animals, and everybody's getting better, and that's kind of what motivates me. But I think it's one of those things. When you look at that, you do this testing, you show the behavior, you show how it's moving, and you can say, yes, I'm going to take this stuff because it's healthy. It doesn't knock you down. I've been taking it for 6 years. I feel stronger. I feel better. And just because of the baseline that we're able to hit, you know, we're seeing differences. And I get, like I was alluding to, I get these calls, and one of the calls, you know, a guy called in and said, you know, I've been taking your product and I'm having really good effects with it. And I said, you know, what kind of effects? And he said, well, do you want the, you know, the 72-year-old retired guy answer, or do you want just the glib quick answer? And I said, no, you know, I developed the stuff. I would like to know what kind of effect it's eliciting in people. And he said, well, okay. And he said, you know, a month ago, and this has been probably 4 months ago. He said, a month ago, I was using a walker and I was thinking about having to go into a retirement home because I needed help. And he said, now I'm doing wind sprints and burpees,
amazing.
It sounded so preposterous to me, but he was completely genuine and sincere. And you can tell, I mean, I believed him. It's fantastic when you can get that kind of benefit to someone. And, that's why we do what we do. And I really do think it's because there's so many factors that increase inflammation. I mean, diet, you know, if people are sucking down, you know, trans fats and adulterated oils, I mean, it's probably better to actually smoke than it is to eat French fries, because you're basically giving your body all the building blocks of its cells. And if there are all these adulterated fats, then you're going to end up with corrupted cells. And, you know, it happens just over time. It builds up in your system and you end up with, you know, aberrant proteins. And we've talked about that before. That's the basis for all the diseases that we class as issues with aging. A huge component of them, probably 80% or better of the chronic diseases, and I think the NIH has some papers on that. I'll send you some links for them. Show that most of that stuff is, as they're coming to find, inflammatory in nature. And so if you can reduce the inflammation and take out the toxicity as just kind of an extra bonus, which, you know, obviously carbon does, then you can create a state whereby animals or people are functioning much more effectively. One of the interesting things, though, and this always cracks me up, is now that we've released products for people, we're getting kind of a focus on that. I think people are really calling in and they see the dosing regimens and the schedules and they understand the testing we've done. But even when it was just for animals, people would call in and I would ask, you know, well, what kind of dog is it? And they'd say, dog, I'm not doing this for a dog. I'm taking this myself, which I thought was great. It was nice, but it really hasn't reached critical mass yet. But I think it's starting to get to a point of collective awareness where people are actually not so shocked by the idea of taking lipofullerenes. I do think that
And when you're saying that, you're saying C60 concoction in olive oil.
And we do it in olive oil. You can do it in coconut oil or avocado oil. I mean, I've literally tested so many of them. The reason actually we focus on olive oil is one, the density. You know, we have 1.0 or 1.2 milligrams per milliliter in terms of the actual density of the C60 in the olive oil. But olive oil gets a higher density, so you get to homeostasis a little more rapidly. But again, there are different reasons to use different lipids. You know, they function differently in different parts of the body. So it's, you know, one lipid does not fit everything. So there's definitely a use case scenario for having those other things. Maybe not so much avocado, but definitely coconut, because coconut is metabolized totally differently. It goes to the liver, cracks into ketones, and splits out in different parts of the bodies. Or your body. And so I can see more of a use case for that. Avocado oil is primarily oleic acid, so it's very, very similar to olive oil. The real benefit to olive oil is that there is a membrane swap on the surface of the cell membranes with the molecules and the lipids. And that's something I would guess is probably just evolved over time, that it really effectively works. And it's primarily oleic acid. So I suppose you could get the same thing with avocado to an extent, but olive oil, for whatever reason, seems to metabolize really, really well. And it's just, all of our test data has been fantastic with it. So
getting back to your cancer stuff, when you say you think it's going to work really, really well, you know, you're going to have results. Are you foreseeing that it, as long as people follow the protocol, or animals follow the protocol, you're going to crack this nut?
I would like to think so, at least in some components. You know, you never want to say that you're going to do that, and because one, it's
there's always some weird thing.
Yeah, well, and it's such a broad claim because there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you've got so many different organ systems, and I mean, again, I could probably prattle off 250 different types of cancer based on all of the different tissue types and all of the different organ systems that can be affected. I mean, mesenchymal, you know, endothelial. I mean, there's all these different things you can deal with. So there's a litany of cancers, and to make a blatant statement like I've done it, I've cured it, that's sort of inappropriate.
Irresponsible.
I wish that were going to happen, but I don't actually think that. And because it serves a purpose.
But don't you think, okay, so you could crack a big part of the nut, and then the stuff that falls off, the periphery, now we start studying that and say, okay, now why does this not work? I mean, it's a big step forward.
Yeah. Now, I do think in terms of our data for metastatic behavior, which is what our patent is for, is in anti-metastatic. What we have very definitively shown and what we're seeing is after they start following the protocol and taking the serum, metastatic behavior, there's a total cessation of it. It just stops. And that's because, you know, the University of Spain and Bilbao released a report and they nailed some of the components. And then Johns Hopkins last year released a paper that nailed some of the components. But if you have a combination of factors where you downregulate interleukin 6 and interleukin 8, which are inflammatory cytokines, at the same time upping the efficiency in the electron transport chain and decreasing loss in the same system, those two groups found that there was no signaling mechanism whereby metastatic behavior could happen. And we had already done that same stuff. And
you kill off the ability for the cells to communicate, to replicate.
Yeah.
And so they can't communicate anymore, which stops them from replicating.
Yes. You can't get the message out to move to some distal part of the body. So distal metastasis stops, which is great because over 80% of everyone who dies from cancer dies from metastasis. I mean, you really don't die of an actual cancer. You die of some other organ system failing because it's been taken over by cells that aren't appropriate for that particular organ system. So this simply stops that. And my hope is that I don't think we're going to completely entirely crack that nut. I would just like to be able to contribute something whereby we give it enough of a leg up that somebody can go back, and if they eliminate the potential for metastasis, they can go in and have surgery or get radiation or do focused chemotherapy or something like that. You know, Western medicine has been pretty fantastic about figuring out ways to obliterate and kill things. I think the offering that we could very legitimately put forth is, if we can stop the spread and lock that down so that there's no metastatic behavior, then you can go back in with your chemo or your radiation or your surgical removals and completely eliminate the issues. And maybe I shouldn't say completely, but you could do it to such a high degree of efficacy that it wouldn't be the same concern, because the numbers are daunting. I mean, 1 out of 2 men, 1 out of 3 women, it's preposterous. I mean, that if you were standing in a room and somebody walked in and shot 1 out of every 2 men or 1 out of every 3 women, I think people would be a little more focused on it. It's just, you know, this is the how do you boil a frog mentality. The temperature's increasing and people get sick and it happens over time. So people don't pay as much attention to it as they should. And what we're doing, I think, will hopefully just give people the ability to stop that spread in animals and eventually stop that spread in people, so that they can use conventional therapies and therapeutics and treatment modalities, you know, whether it's surgical or radiation, to do that. And so